The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
But first, as the pandemic continues to strike lives and livelihoods, our main streets are like ghost towns. Shutters down and only the odd shop open. With weeks more of restrictions to go, no customers and rents outstanding, how many of those shutters will go back up again? Is it time for landlords to give people a break from payments? Should the government pay the rents? And what will our high streets look like when this is all over? We're joined from Cork by Beth Horton of the Docklands Restaurant and Deli, and in studio by Brian O'Callaghan, a partner with William Fry Solicitors, and Damien O'Reilly, a lecturer in retail management at TU Dublin. You're all very welcome to the programme. Brian O'Callaghan, if I could go to you first, because you're dealing with issues around landlords and payment of rent and so forth. Rent is owed. Yes, it is owed. That's part of the contract. But we live in the real world, and in the real world, everything has changed, hasn't it?
It has, Richard, and It's interesting you touch on the rent is owed, and it's interesting how that seems to be acknowledged by most parties. Actually, I thought there might be a bigger battle for people to say, well, is there any way out of my rent? We had that for the first couple of weeks, actually, a lot of questions around that. But I think that's passed and people understand the rent is due and owing. But for sure, what we're seeing at the moment is tenants aren't paying. Some can't pay, obviously. Some won't pay, and there's a difference. And landlords are adopting, I think, in general, a wait-and-see approach, because when this started and tenants didn't pay the first quarter's rent, maybe due in the start of April, landlords reacted badly in some cases, saying, well, we don't know how long this is going to last, so let's wait and see. And maybe it's too early to stop paying rent. And as things progressed, I think landlords understood that a lot of tenants can't pay.
And in your experience, have you any sense of the scale in which rents are not being paid by commercial tenants?
Not on a percentage basis, Richard, but I would say there's a lot of tenants not paying. I know a lot of the UK retailers decided unilaterally, those in based in here and the UK, just not to pay the quarter's rent, almost like strength in numbers. And we've seen that across shopping centre portfolios.
So they would be big retailers then?
Absolutely, big retailers. And so I know we'll talk a lot today, I'm sure, about the small cafe owners and the likes of that, who are really struggling. But the big ones might be straying into the can't pay as opposed to won't pay territory. They're trying to husband the cash they have as well, which is understandable.
Beth Horton of the Docklands Restaurant and Deli in Cork. I mean, in your own situation, obviously the business is closed. Have you had rent issues? Have you paid rent?
We obviously had paid our first quarter, but then we stopped paying rent purely because we absolutely knew that we just weren't going to be able to. And obviously it's a huge worry for us going forward, because obviously restaurants can open from the 29th of June if we can. And to be asked to pay the rent in the level that we have, where we're based in the sort of the city quarter on the docks in Cork. So rent and rates are extremely high, and it's just not viable. I mean, it's impossible. We've done all our sums from having 50% at a maximum capacity, which we won't have. So you're really talking about 30% capacity to where we were before this all happened.
And what sort of response, Beth, did you get from the landlord when you said we can't pay? And did you have to come to some sort of an arrangement, or what was that like?
So basically, the situation we're in now, they were talking about us paying for the second quarter and the fourth quarter, but that's just, it's impossible. It's just not viable. It's you know, we'd have to win the lottery to be able to do that. And we know, because we've lost all our corporate bookings for Christmas. So we're in a situation where if we can open, it's how do we open, and even just to pay some kind of wages to some staff to maybe survive and keep our brand and our name out there. And that's really, it's firefighting. It's firefighting just to stay alive.
And are you of the view that perhaps the government should step in some way and contribute? I know, for example, some people were talking about in Sweden that there's some landlord relationship there where if the landlord agrees to take a bit of a hit on the rent, that the government will step in and match that.
I think that is an option. I think that there are two types of landlords. You have the landlords who are small landlords, and then you have the big landlords who invested, an awful lot of them are investment portfolios. So they're in it for the long run. And I think that for once, you know, the Irish people have took the hit the last time. And I think that a lot of the landlords, you know, they can afford it because it's a financial, it's an investment. And their worth is the people that are in the buildings. And if they don't look after those people, then they won't, you know, if we can't pay our rent and we are kicked out, who else is going to take a 100-seater restaurant in the Docklands of Cork?
And that raises a whole point about the options facing landlords, Brian. I mean, the landlords can't afford it, can they?
I think Beth touched on it very well there, actually, that there might be a view that the larger landlords can afford it and can absorb it, but they've got investors, they've got legal obligations, they've got loans and on occasions as well, they have to pay banks. I know there was a talk at the start of the crisis that the government would do something, and particularly in the residential sector, they said, well, if a landlord gets a deferral of its loan obligation with the bank, that should be passed on to the tenant. And we don't seem to be hearing much about that in the commercial space, actually. But I think it would be a pretty huge undertaking.
But a lot of these landlords, if they're bigger institutions, for example, they may have some borrowings, etc., on the building, but they have a financial plan that's all about the next 15 or 20 years. If they take a bit of a financial hit over a 6 month or a 9 month period, can they not ride it out?
Some of them might be able to. It'll be a case-by-case scenario. I mean, certainly I'm hearing a bit like Beth. There's a growing sense among tenants that landlords should share the pain. And why should they be the only part of society or sector in business that not to take some pain on this? And certainly what we're seeing at the coalface of this, Richard, and I've done lots of these deals already, where I would recommend anyone doing a deal make sure it's properly recorded in a legal variation to the contract. But we're seeing rent waivers, we're seeing rent freezes, we're seeing, for example, two quarters of rent being frozen at the moment, but being agreed to be paid off over the next year. And that, again, that won't suit everyone. It mightn't suit someone like Beth, whose income is totally based on the doors being open, but it might suit other tenants. But landlords are being pragmatic. And I think now that we're starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel, there's a bit more willingness to engage.
OK. Damien O'Reilly, when we look at this, the landscape and the tensions that this brings about, and the next phase as businesses start to open, and it isn't just about cafes and restaurants, it's about all retailers. How big a challenge do you think this will be for the future of retailing? And could it just reshape the future of how we shop?
Well, the first thing I'd say, Richard, is that there were, before the this virus, there were 280,000 people employed directly in the retail industry. It's the largest provider of employment in the country. So that makes it a very, very big sector. And I think everybody at home would appreciate, is that the retailers that are open have done extremely well to manage the social distancing, the supermarkets and so on. But looking at the future to see what's going to happen, listening to what Brian and Beth are saying is that there's no immediate relief for this. So there's no kind of V-shaped curve coming back into this, which means that the landscape is going to change. If you take that pubs don't open, there's a lot of pubs in Temple Bar, and cafes and restaurants rely on the pub trade. So the people go to the pub, and after the pub's closed, they go to the cafes and restaurants. They're not going to be able to open if the pubs aren't open. You've also got, fashion retailers, for example. their conversion rate, for example, is probably less than 10%. So if every 10 people who go into, or 100 people go into the shop, 10 buy, 90 leave without buying anything. Can you, subsequent to the coronavirus and distancing, have 10 people in your shop? Maybe not. And then you're going to have people who just browse, walk in, walk out and not buy anything. You know, things are going to have to change drastically. And this is a period of time when retailers and the government and the bodies that are responsible for managing the local county councils and so on have to get together and decide what they're going to do with the retail environment.
We have a text in there, Damien, and it says the government pays for nothing. It's the taxpayers that pay. Yeah, every sector is looking for free money. It can't be done.
No, it can't be done. And we're going to be stuck with a bill at the end of this. You know, there's no doubt, if you listen to Pascal O'Donoghue, we're going to have a large bill to be repaid at the end of this. And it's the taxpayers who end up paying this at the end. Notwithstanding the likes of what Brian said about the large retailers landlords, you know, a lot of those are not getting their money. That's putting them under pressure. One of the large landlords in the UK who own a lot of large shopping centres only took in 27% of their rent in the second quarter or the first quarter. That is just not sustainable for large companies either. So somebody's, you know, we've got to apportion this blame, not the blame, sorry, we've got to apportion the costs across the sectors, and everybody's got to buy into this.
And it's got to be shared out. Brian, when you look at the last recession, the questions of of people not being able to pay rents in shops because of the downturn, and they were overextended on debt and leases were too expensive. That it raised similar issues. What happened last time out?
I think the last time there was a big, I think we should see it again now, there was just constructive dialogue was what worked best for the parties, and tenants who were willing to actually show their books to a landlord and say, this is my situation, I cannot pay the rent at the level because this is our income, this is our turnover. And landlords appreciated that and in lots of cases gave rent reductions and varied the leases. Because a landlord in recessionary times does not want an empty unit. I mean, that's why I think landlords have to be pragmatic in most cases as well and try and find a solution that works for both parties. And I've heard this, all the language from the last recession coming back already, the can't pay versus won't pay. And I think tenants who are willing to actually just go to their landlords, constructive dialogue, be reasonable, you in most cases should get a reasonable reception, but there needs to be a financial case to show, which in most cases tenants will be able to demonstrate.
Beth, when you hear that and you've outlined yourself how even if you were to defer rent and reach an agreement to defer the rent, the point at which it's going to be due, you already reckon you're going to be trading at a much, much lower level.
I just think that the as in the restaurant sector, no matter what way you look at it, by November, December next year, you're still talking about the maximum group of people that might be able to sit together being maybe 8 people. Whereas a business like us, I mean, obviously, we have our rent deferred to the fourth quarter, that is all based on your turnover for December. And that's just not going to be there this year. And I think we all know that. So therefore, you're putting yourself in a situation that you just won't be able to do it.
And what about Beth? Some people would say, look, if that's the way it's going to play, that's the way it's going to play. The government cannot fund every business and every sector and landlords and rent and so forth. Why not close? Oh, and reopen again.
Well, that would be obviously something that we would have looked at and are looking at as well, because obviously we understand that, and I'm well aware that there are a lot of industries in exactly the same situation that we are in, and it is an impossible situation. I don't know all the answers. I suppose I'm just coming from the restaurant sector because that's the sector that I'm in and where I work, and then talking to people who are also in the same industry as we are, and that is that it is unsustainable. So it's not like me kind of saying, well, it's just about us, because it's not. I know it's the same for all of us. So it really, there has to be a definite plan, or there is going to be an awful lot of people on unemployment benefits for
a longer period of time.
For a very long time. So you do something to start generating money and getting people out and working again, or you have everybody sitting at home, and that's going to cost us, all of us, even more for both, mental for people.
And Damien, I want to ask you just on the wider issue, what about the point that, look, let's say an area in Dublin city centre like Grafton Street, and we saw lots of shops close and then new restaurants or new shops opened again after the recession was over, and that really to some extent this is part of what happens over a 40 or 50 year period when you look back at somewhere like Grafton Street.
Yeah, indeed. The landscape in Grafton Street over the last 40 years has changed. And, if you went back 40 years, you'd probably have seen mainly indigenous Irish companies there that would have been there for years and years. And once the multinationals came to town, especially since we had the euro here and we had that currency, the safety of having a euro as a currency, is that the likes of Zara and Monsoon and H&M came into Ireland. And now it's become streets like homogenous streets like they have throughout Europe or throughout the world.
Well, I was reading an article by Hugh Oram, a sort of a recollection of Grafton Street in the 1980s. And he talked about how there was fish and poultry shops, there were hot bread shops, there was an antique shop, there was even an Arab information centre at one point that I presume on the basis of shopping habits and things like rents, that's just not where it's at anymore.
It's not feasible now. The rents and the rates are for these premises are very high. And a lot of the times is that these stores want to have, the big multinationals want to have a shop on the likes of Grafton Street because it's the main one and the flagship stores. So they're maybe not making a lot of money, but they're there to kind of create the brand, create the image and to support the image of the brand. You know, but what's going to happen over the years to come is that this is definitely a game changer. And, you know, people will talk about regeneration of the streets or reinvigorating. You know, I would like to think that, you know, this is about not reinventing, but it's repurposing retailing. So what's the purpose of retail in the future? Are we going to change consumer habits by, you know, by that is like we've all got into the habit of cooking our own breakfast or maybe having something at home. If we're going to continue that, restaurants and cafes like Bet's are not going to be able to survive because they're not getting the breakfast straight, for example, anymore. People working from home, the same thing is that people are going to eat at home. So therefore, certain sectors are going to be, moving up.
And
the local grocery stores, for example, people are moving more towards fresh produce and moving towards more local. And the one last thing I'd say is that if you're buying and you're buying online, buy Irish. Because it keeps the money in the country and it keeps jobs.
And we may be seeing the beginning of a longer term change. Beth Horton, Brian O'Callaghan and Damien O'Reilly, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you. No problem.
You're welcome.